Turn to Matthew chapter 5 with me. We're going to jump right in because I have a lot I want to get to, and I think this is a really important day. I'll let you know that here more in just a minute. Matthew chapter 5. In these Bibles, if you don't have a Bible, grab this, or if you don't have one with you, you can borrow this. Page 659. If you don't have a good Bible at home that's readable, take that with you. We'd love for you to mark that up and have that and all of that. Matthew chapter 5. So I think one of the things that pastors don't do well, and I throw myself under the bus with this too, is we oversell things. Like everything's the biggest ever, or the worst ever, or the the most important ever, or whatever. I don't want to do that. Hyperbole is one of my love languages, so I'm trying not to do that. But I really do think that today starts one of the most consequential series in Wellspring's history. Like, I think if you could see what things happen because of a teaching series, this might move the ball more than a lot of the other ones. Maybe ever. I don't know. I don't want to say that lightly. If you've been around a while, you know I don't say that often or maybe ever. But I believe that today starts one of the most consequential series in Wellspring's history. And so we're going to try to do multiple things to get the whole church a little bit involved in that. Today, to kick off the series, we have our fifth graders joining us. I think there's some fifth graders in the room. Welcome to you guys. Starting in May, when you move up into the sixth grade classes, let me give your parents time to swallow hard for that. But when you move into the middle school, you'll be in here regularly, and so we want to give you a sense of what that looks like. For today, to make that easier, there's a family discussion guide out in the lobby at the Welcome Center. You can grab one of those on the way out. It gives you something to talk to your kids about, to follow up on the message. That would be great to do as well. And be glad to pick that up. Also, our students, sixth grade to senior, on Wednesday nights, we're going to be doing a series paralleling this. So we're kicking off today. They'll be kicking off the series on Wednesday. It won't be a repeat, a rerun, so there's new information, but it's along the same lines. Rob and I have kind of worked on this together. So if you normally, we have some students who come to both. We have some students who just come Sunday morning, some who just come Wednesday night. If you're here this morning and you don't normally come to Wednesday, we'd really want to encourage you the next 3 weeks to come Wednesday and be part of that series. If you have students who are not here today, but they normally do come Wednesday, we'd love for them to come out the next couple of weeks on Sunday mornings as we do this series together, because I really do believe that today starts one of the most consequential series in Wellspring's history. And so I want you to be a part of that. In fact, if you can, I want you to try to mark off the next 3 weeks besides today to say this is going to be a priority. We're going to make this happen because I think this is really important. Let me start with in Matthew chapter 5. I think this is going to give us a context to jump into the message, which will be real helpful. Matthew chapter 5, page 659 in the Bibles in your seats. Verse 1 says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down, and his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them." So Jesus went up on a mountainside to teach his disciples because of the crowds. He saw the crowds, and that prompted him to go up on the mountainside. When he went up on the mountainside, he sat down to teach his disciples. And we call this often the Sermon on the Mount. But at least in the early parts of Matthew chapter 5, he's not teaching the crowds specifically. That wasn't his purpose. Now, they may have wandered up there, but that's not his purpose. He went up there to teach his disciples. It says it very clearly. And I don't think I've ever caught that. I mean, all the movies, all the paintings show Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount teaching this massive crowd. And like that's why he did it, to get a little perspective, a little higher, so they could hear him, a little over, they could see him, all that. And you catch that in all of the different paintings and artworks and movies and things about that. I don't think it was true. Like, this is a famous painting by Karl Heinrich Block. This is from 1890. This painting is everywhere. It's a very famous painting of the Sermon on the Mount. A lot of paintings are similar to this in the way they lay this out. You can actually find this painting. If you Google it, you can find this painting on Catholic websites, Protestant websites. I found this painting on a Mormon website. I mean, you can find this painting everywhere. And you'll notice that Block paints it like we often think of it, where Jesus has his disciples there, but then also all these crowds packing in to hear every word from the beginning. I don't think that's true. Now, by the way, Rob said he's always been cool. I've always been a dork, and you've known that. But when I saw this painting, something jumped out at me. You see the little boy down in the bottom corner? Like, zoom in on him just a little bit. Like, he's pouring something on his mama's head. I don't know what that is exactly. Is that a booger? I don't know what that is. He's got something on his mama's head. And then look at her poor face. She's praying to Jesus like, "Oh, Lord, help me, this boy. I don't know what to do." Some of you have this kid in your house. Like, she's saying, "Oh, heavens, I don't know what's happening." And he's missing the Sermon on the Mount altogether. I just think that's funny. I don't think that's funny. Anyway, But in the picture, there's people everywhere. Like Jesus teaching these crowds of people. That's not exactly what it says. Again, look at it. I don't want to try to talk you into something. Look at it again. Matthew 5:1 says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds," he sees them, he responds to them, "by going up on a mountainside and sitting down, and his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them." Now, why does that matter? I mean, if Jesus' purpose to get up on the mountain wasn't to teach the disciples or the crowds, then why does Matthew mention the crowds at all? He said, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside to teach his disciples. I think the crowds prompted Jesus to better prepare his disciples. Jesus seeing the crowds prompted him to better prepare his disciples, and that's huge. So what does he teach them? Now, I do think if you look later on in chapter 7, I think the crowds began to meander up there. I just don't think that was his purpose. So what does Jesus teach his disciples about the crowds? Well, you can follow along there. Starting in verse 3, he tells them that their perspective on life is all off. They don't want to be poor in spirit. They don't want to mourn or be meek or hungry and thirsty. But he's telling them, you're going to find life in all kinds of unusual places. Places you're not looking for now. And you've got to understand that if you're going to live in the kingdom. And starting in verse 7, he tells them to be merciful. He asks them to focus on purity of heart. He tells them to make peace, but tells them not to shy away from persecution. And then there's this very weird verse in verse 11. Look at verse 11 with me. It says, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So he says this very un-American statement that when things are tough, you should be excited about it. And that's not how I think. That's not how it is at all. And he says, it's not just when you're having a hard time, but when you're having a hard time because of me. Not just because you did something stupid or sinful, but because you're following God and that's causing you hardship, you should be glad, he says, because you're joining a long history of men and women who had it tough before you. And you know, parenthetically, this verse is getting more and more important every year, because it's getting tougher to be a Christian in America. I mean, people's perspectives are changing. Animosity towards the church and Christians and Christianity is on the rise. Our freedoms are likely going to be challenged over the years. And it's going to be harder to be a Christian. In some ways, I hate that. I think it's bad for our country. I think having Jesus as the centerpiece of our country is a better way to go. But in other ways, I say bring it on. And I don't say that lightly or flippantly. I think it's going to be hard. I just don't want to get to heaven and be talking to Daniel about his experience and then him asking me mine. And be talking to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Be talking to Peter and Paul and James, who were beheaded and crucified and all that. And it's like, tell me about yours. Like, I'll be like the trust fund baby who gets in on it, you know, with no hardship at all. Silver spoon in my mouth, 21st century American Christian. Like, I don't want that for our nation. But in some ways, I'm getting some street cred in heaven. Like, bring it on. Let's have a little bit of a hardship. Let's do this thing together. Rejoice when it gets tough, he says. Okay, we'll do that. Rejoice when it gets tough. Look at verse 13. It says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." Now remember, verse 13 is to prepare his disciples for the crowd. It's like that silly attorney commercial where the guy says he's doing it for the people. Like, this is for the crowd. This is Jesus is teaching the disciples for the crowd. He says, "You are the salt of the earth." You're the salt of the earth. Now, when we think of salt in our day, I typically think of one of two things. Either I think of flavoring my food to make it less bland, or I think about on slick days, icy snow days, a couple days a year, helping the roads, right? That's the two things I think about. But in those days, salt was primarily used to replace your freezer. So salt preserved meat so it didn't get funky. That's the scientific phrase, but it keeps it from getting funky. So salty Christians, if you want to use that analogy, and I'm not talking about Christians who have bad attitudes, but salty Christians preserve nations. They help cultures not get funky. And look around. We're getting a little funky, right? I mean, we're getting a little rancid. I think we need some more salt. Look at verse 14. It says, "You are the light of the world." So not just the salt of the earth, but the light of the world. And when you think about light of the world, let me make sure we're clear on this. Light in those days was primarily something that was on fire. So you'd have a wick on a candle. You'd have a lantern with, you know, the little wick there as well. And so the candle or the lantern didn't provide the light. It just provided a place for the fire to go, for the light to shine. In our day, you have a light bulb and it has a little electrical filament or a fluorescent tube or the LED thingy, whatever that is, and electricity provides the light. So electricity hits that filament or electricity hits that tube or hits that LED, and that causes that to light up and be bright. But it's not really the filament that causes light, it's the electricity that causes light, right? And I think the analogy is dead center. God's not asking you to shine bright. God's asking you to create space for him to shine bright through you. Create space for him to bring fire to your life to draw attention of the world. He's not asking that from you. It says, you're the light of the world. Verse 14, you're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people put a light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. So he's talking about a town here. What is a town in this analogy? It's a collection of lights, right? So you have a single light, or a town is a collection of lights. Like if you've seen the maps, the global maps where they have the cities lit up and you see where New York or Los Angeles or whatever it is and it's bright, and then you go out to Wyoming and there's nothing. It's all darkness, right? It's like all this, the light. It's the same thing. A town is a collection of lights, and a town on a hill cannot be hidden. So you're a light, Jesus says, and a collection of lights, a church, cannot be hidden, should not be hidden. So what do? He says, you put it on a stand, you highlight it, and you certainly don't put a bowl on top to dampen down the light coming from it, which is God's work in your life. And when you do that, it lights up the house, which, in to follow the analogy, it lights up the world. Just so we don't miss the bottom line, look at verse 16. He gets real blunt. He says, in the same way, in case you missed my obvious connections, in the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So I want to make sure you catch this. I'm not just talking about candles and lanterns and salt. I'm talking about you and the work you're going to do to point people to God. We've titled this series, Be a Light, these next 4 weeks, based on this teaching from Jesus. And so we're going to talk for this week and the next 3 weeks about how to live that out and some very specific ways of how to live that out. But I think you may think I'm confused at this point. It hit me. At this point, you're hearing me say, be a light, be a light, be a light. We're reading about being a light. And yet the word behind me says everyone. It's like I got confused or something. I don't know what you may be thinking about that. But starting next Sunday, this board will be out in the lobby so that you can get to it. I just wanted it up here today to introduce it to you and show it to you. And it's going to be all dark like this next week. When you get out there, I'll explain why, but it's going to be all dark like this when you get out in the lobby next week. But we're going to leave it up all year. Like, this is the theme for 2022. We're going to have this out all year long. This is kind of the kickoff for the year. This is going to be out there all year long. And hopefully, over the course of the year, it's going to be lit up a little bit. Let me show you what it might look like as the year goes on. As the year goes on, it's going to look a little more like this. Now, you notice it's not all filled in. Hopefully, we'll fix that too. But it's going to be lit up more and more as the year goes on. And hopefully, over the course of the year, we're going to fill it completely in. So here's how this is going to work. In 2022, I want to ask you as a family, whether that's just you or you and a spouse, or if your boyfriend and girlfriend want to do it together, fine. Roommates, want to do it, however you want to do it. If you have kids, certainly have kids involved, grandkids, however you want to do that. But this year, 2022, I want to ask that you would love and pray and get bold to be a light in our community. To spread the good news of Jesus, not just to certain people, not just to the church, but to everyone. That is our job. We're the light of the world, the salt of the earth. A town on a hill can't be hidden. So here's what I'm asking each individual family to do. I'm going to ask you to pray together. I think if you can do it as a family together, whatever that looks like for you, whether it's 1, 2, 26 people, however many people are there, pray together for 4 people. Or families, if you want to pray for families, but pick out 4. Maybe it's a coworker of one of the parents. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a family that your kids play baseball with together, students. Maybe it's somebody in your math class or science class, something. Somebody that you're going to pray for that way, and the whole family can pray for your friend in geometry. That'd be awesome. But I'm going to ask you to pray for them every day by name. Not just God help my, but like pray for your four people, four families every day. And just to make sure we're on the same page, I think you understand this, but I feel like I've got to say this. This is about helping people who are not connected to Jesus, not tied into a local church. So we're not asking you to try to get people who go to the bridge to come over to our church. That's not what this is about. They're on the same team as we are. Like this is not, Thompson Station's great, Church of the City, Station Hill, a lot of great churches in Spring Hill. We're not trying to get any of their people. So this is none of your four can be any of those people. That's not what this is about. This is about people who are not connected to Jesus, do not have a connection to a local church. That you're going to pray for four of them every day as a family, and you're going to be looking for opportunities for God to help you be a light. And here's, I'm going to give you a couple options of what that might look like. So over time, as you're praying for them every day, you're going to be asking God to give you an opportunity to kind of tell them spiritually what God means to you. The Bible word for that is just testimony. You're giving your testimony. Tell them what God's done in your life. And if you take the nerve to tell them what God's done in your life. Doesn't matter what they do with it. Doesn't matter if they say, man, that's awesome, or man, that's stupid. It doesn't matter how they react. It really doesn't matter at all for this, how they act. It's just up to you doing as much as it depends on you. So if you tell them your story, no matter how it goes, the next Sunday, you and your family, bring the whole family together with it, you and your family, go to the board in the lobby, find one of the lights that's not on, and turn it on. And we'll see this board come up lighter. So that's one of the options, is you can do that with one of those lights. Another option, as your family is praying every day for your four families, it's for everyone, so four families makes that easy to say. As your family is praying every day for your four, and you get the opportunity to tell them about Jesus, tell them about the gospel. I mean, if you're praying, that opportunity may come open. God may provide you an opportunity to do that. And again, it doesn't matter how they respond. This is not about what they're doing. This is about what just us being obedient. So as you tell them the best you know, and we'll talk about how to do that over the next couple of weeks, as you tell them about Jesus, no matter how it goes, no matter how they respond, the next Sunday you get your whole family together. And by the way, I'm picturing, I don't know if this is true, this is going to happen or not. I want it to happen. In my head, I'm picturing not, it's not just being an adult thing. If you've got a child who's old enough to kind of understand what we're doing, and you're praying every day for maybe your coworker, or praying every day for one of their classmates, and you're doing that as a family, and then one of these things happens and you go to screw the light bulb in, let your kid be part of that process. Because I promise you, if they get to screw the light bulb in or watch you screw the light bulb in, that is going to stick with them far more than anything. It's powerful. But so you've told them about Jesus. You find a bulb that's not lit up and you go in that Sunday and you turn it on and you light it up. Because we're going to be a light to the community. Now those two are the harder two options. If I had a preference, that's probably my top two options, that you do that. But I want to give you one or two more options. A third option is that you invite them. So as you're praying for them every day, as you're finding ways to be kind to them and love them, genuinely listen to them, be a friend to them, invite them to church. You know? And if they come with you, again, it doesn't matter when they come, if they liked it or not. Doesn't matter if they respond to the gospel or not. Doesn't matter if they think I'm funny or not. I mean, I know you think I'm funny, but it doesn't matter if they think I'm funny or not. None of that matters. You're just doing your part. If you invite them to church and they come, the next week you come up and you screw in the light bulb. That one's not one to come on. Fantastic. That's great. That one will come on. Great. If you've got one that doesn't come on, then you just get pick a different one. We'll replace that one. That'll be fine. This also works, by the way, with life groups. You know, there's friends in your life, neighbors, coworkers, et cetera, who may not come to this setting. They've got a problem with church. They don't know that. But to come to your house and eat snacks and talk about life and maybe pull out a Bible lesson or something, they might do that. Invite them to your life group. And if they come with you to life group, even if they don't ever come back, even if they thought that's not for them, you've done what you can do. Then the next Sunday, you come out and you find a light bulb and hopefully it turns on and you turn it on. That'd be great. And over the course of 2022, we're going to go from an empty light board to hopefully almost, if not entirely, full as we're being a light to our community. Being a light to our community. Because Jesus said, you are the light of the world. That's who you are. As we prepare to wrap up this message, I want us to consider Jesus' words from Matthew 16:24. In Matthew 16:24, Jesus says, whoever wants to be my disciple, my follower, must deny themselves and must take up their cross. There's some self-sacrifice involved here. So there's some risk involved here. And choose to follow me. So if you want to follow Jesus, you've got to, I know this sounds really deep theologically. If you want to follow Jesus, you've got to follow Jesus. Like, that is part of what that means. It's not just about having a thought or belief. It's like following Jesus. That's what he calls us to do. And I had a new thought recently that I had never considered before. And it's not a new thought like it just, I didn't know the information was true. It's more like I knew this was true, and I knew this was true, but I never had synthesized that. I never had put those two thoughts together. You ever things like that where you know something's true, and you know something's true, but all of a sudden they come together, and you're like, man, I never had realized. It was one of those deals. So I had known this a long time. I had known this a long time. I never had considered the two together. And I really think you're going to think I'm making a joke. I'm really not. It really is transformational when you think about these two together and the implications for our life. It was powerful for me. So are you ready for this? So my realization is that Jesus didn't have email. Jesus didn't have texting. Jesus didn't do Facebook Messenger. Jesus never once talked on a telephone, not one time. Cell phone or landline, cordless, long cord, nothing, ever on a telephone. Jesus didn't have Facebook. He didn't have Instagram. He didn't have TikTok. Jesus didn't have Netflix or YouTube or Apple TV. I mean, Jesus didn't know anything about Ted Lasso or the Yellowstone Ranch. Like, he didn't know anything about any of that. Jesus didn't have 24-hour news, so he didn't watch Fox or CNN or MSNBC. He didn't pick sides. He didn't watch either one. Now, I know some of you are saying, wait, they weren't even on TV. I get that. They weren't around then. Stay with me. The idea is that Jesus wasn't focused on what was happening in Washington, D.C. There wasn't a Washington, D.C. when Jesus walked the earth. And he didn't seem to be all that concerned about Rome, honestly. So what's my point of all of this? Jesus was right here. Always. Whoever is right in front of him is the only person he's contacting. It's very likely Jesus never wrote or received a letter. I mean, they had letters in that time. The New Testament's a lot of letters, but it wasn't a common thing like today. No junk mail, no. The idea is that Jesus didn't read a magazine or a newspaper. Like this, Jesus was just right here with whoever was standing in front of him. And the reality that's been very concerning to me is how much of my time is not right here, but all over here. Or right here. Like, I spend far too much time right here when I'm missing people right in front of me. If we're going to follow Jesus, part of that, I believe, is to get better at this and not do all of the stuff that I typically do. I mean, how often is my focus right here? How often am I not right here because I'm all over here? How often am I not being a light that he's calling me to be because I'm looking at a glow from a screen? I mean, the irony of that is so huge to me. So I want to challenge us to do something as a setup for this series, as a setup for being the light. I want to challenge us to do something that I think was commonplace for Jesus, but very unusual for us. I want to challenge us to do something of a fast, but it won't be about food, so don't get nervous about it. Won't be about that. I remember, let me give you an example. A few years ago, we did a thing called Rice and Beans Weekend. How many of you were here for the Rice and Bean Weekend? A few of you remember? The idea was we had talked about how we should use the opportunities we have to do good things for God. So Jesus says, to whom much has been given, much is required or expected. And, you know, we have so much opportunity that a lot of the world doesn't have. And so we talked about how a lot of the world eats rice and beans every meal of every day. That's all they eat is rice and beans. And so we said for a weekend, from Friday after school or after work, all the way till Monday morning when you wake up, the weekend, don't eat anything but rice and beans. And I thought, this is not going to be hard. This is, people are whining about it. Like, it's fine. It's not a big deal. Like, it's just a couple of days, a couple of meals. No big deal. Just don't eat. It'll be fine. Like, whatever you want to do. And people were complaining and fighting. Like, and they were asking me all these questions. Like, well, can you put spices in the, it's like, you're missing the point. Okay. Like, can you have a tortilla with it? I'm like, ah, you're just missing the point. Just rice and meat. Anyway, so we got to the weekend and I was all kind of smug. Like, this is just, why are you making this? It was one of the worst weekends of my life. I just want to go on record. It was horrible. Like, I was such a weenie the whole weekend, whining about not being able to eat anything but rice and beans. It was a discipline, but it was also a reminder of what the rest, much of the world faces every day of their life. And I just take for granted all of these options and flavors, and I just don't think about it. And what stands out to me looking back is how different that weekend was compared to the rest of my life. And just the, like, it was a shock value And I noticed appreciating things afterwards that I didn't appreciate before. Because I just was kind of shocked into the system. So I want to challenge us to have another experience that shocks the system. And I think it will reveal to us, it will reveal to me certainly, that I normally do things very different than I realize that I do. So next weekend, no pressure, no obligation, this is voluntary. Don't send me an email whining, because it's up to you if you do it or not. Next weekend, I want to challenge you from when you get off work or school on Friday till Monday morning when you wake up to be screen free. So, I know. If you'd rather eat rice and beans, that's up to you. Anyway, screen free. But you can use a phone as a phone. Remember like when people used to talk on their phone? It's crazy. You can do that, but no social media, no scrolling, no television, screen free. Somebody did ask me earlier, can you use a GPS to get from place to place? That's fine. Do that. Again, I'm not trying to be a legalist here. I'm just saying screen free, right? Now note, I did make sure when we did the Rice and Bean Weekend, I'm not from Columbia. When we did the Rice and Bean Weekend, I scheduled it on Mule Day weekend, not knowing that I did that. I almost had a revolt on the south side of Wellspring. Like, there's a whole, I can't eat the deep fried whatever it is this weekend because of you. So I did make sure this next weekend is not Super Bowl weekend. Like, it's in between championship weekend, Super Bowl weekend. So I understand there's commitment and there's crazy. I'm not asking you to be screen-free on Super Bowl weekend. So we're not doing that. But listen, here's why I'm wanting to challenge you to do this. Now, I tell people all the time, if you're new to Wellspring, you may not have heard me say this. If I ask you to do something and there's not a chapter and verse attached to it, I don't have the authority to tell you to do it. If the Bible says it, I'm going to tell you to do it. But it's not because of my authority, it's because of the Bible's authority. So if the Bible doesn't say it, I'm not going to. There's no verse in Galatians that says go screen free. So I don't have a chapter and verse here. But I also want to challenge you to give me a sense that Jesus ever looked at a screen. Let's have that debate and then that'll be fine. I do think this is not something I can force you to do, certainly. I would never think of that. I think this is how Jesus lived, obviously. And I think if you do it, you'll be shocked at how much time you spent looking at your hand. I think I'll be shocked by that. And I think it will change the way you live going forward. I think it may also be horrible, and that'll be fine. We'll do it together. I'm confident that I mindlessly spend more time in front of a screen than I realize. And I think this will help me see that. And the weekend without a screen will give me more time to pray. It'll give me more time to read, more time to spend with my family. I mean, maybe you'll have a conversation or something crazy. I mean, maybe you'll do that. That'll be great. It'll also be a massive look in the mirror to say, my goodness, I didn't know I was spending that much time looking at a screen. I think Jesus had a perspective that most of us just can't even comprehend because of all the things, all the people who aren't right in front of us who are demanding our attention. I mean, just consider how many people who are not right in front of you who are asking you for your thoughts and attention. Jesus was only right here. And many of us are not right here because we're all over the place. We're not a light in the world because we're focused on the glow of a screen. Now listen, I'm not asking you to be a light even to people outside of your circles. I'm just asking you to be a light to people, the circles you live in. Because in the circles that you and I live in are people who Jesus died for, who don't know him. They may know about him, but they don't know him. There are coworkers and neighbors and families who play with our kids and classmates. And they may know about Jesus. They may know who Jesus is, but they don't know him. And one day, they will all stand before him. And he will say to them, away from me, I never knew you. And I need us to love intentionally. I need us to be a light to those people. Because Jesus said that the reality, whether we live it or not, is that you are the light of the world. And that you're to let your light shine before others, they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. We're it. There's not a backup light coming. We're the light. So if the world is darker than you like, and let me just answer that question for you. The world is darker than I like it to be. If the world is darker than you like, you're the light. I'm supposed to be the light. Think of it this way. Next time you go into a dark room, I want you to remember this moment. Next time you go into a dark room, I want you to ask yourself, why are you not focused on the darkness? Why are you not yelling at the darkness, telling it to get out? Why are you not complaining about the shadows in the corners? Why are you not saying, man, it's so hard to see in here? Why don't you focus on the darkness when you go into a dark room? You don't focus on it because you instinctively just flip on a light and the darkness takes care of itself. And when we turn on the light of God, the darkness kind of takes care of itself. The Bible says, Jesus says, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church as it goes into every corner of the world. We're a city on a hill, a collection of lights that's meant to shine out and take the bowl off our head. I mean, how silly, if I can just be blunt, how silly must the American church sound sometimes? We sit in little circles, complain to each other about the darkness when we're supposed to be the light. I mean, what happens in heaven when they witness those conversations? In heaven, when there's men and women standing before God, a long procession of people, broad as the road, Jesus said, a long procession of people who one after another, he tells them they have to leave. Not because he doesn't love them, not because he didn't pay the penalty for their sin, not because he didn't shed his blood to buy their freedom, but they have to leave because they don't know him. Because they had never accepted his offer of forgiveness and freedom and relationship that he so desperately wanted to have. I don't believe Jesus tells people to leave because out of anger. I think you'll see brokenheartedness in his eyes. So what's happening in heaven when men and women stand before God, a long procession of people, and all the while the church, the light of the world, sits in little circles complaining about the darkness? I mean, if I was an angel, I'd be ticked off all the time at us. Like, stop it. I mean, the reality is, in my head, I think this is true. I think we make Jesus too tame. We make Jesus too monotone. I mean, turn on a movie about Jesus or read a book, and Jesus is usually long-haired, kind of greasy. He's very monotone. Like, he doesn't get too excited, doesn't get too sad. He's just kind of flatline all the time. I don't think that's true of Jesus. I think he had emotions. I think he was fired up at times. I think he was sad at times. I think he was excited at times. I think he did all that. He was the most wholehearted person that's ever lived. I think he had the whole range. But we read his words, and because they're from Jesus, many of them are commonplace, even among people who don't know the Bible. Now, they may think those words are from Ben Franklin or Abe Lincoln or something, but it's Jesus' words that are famous because he said them. And so we hear these words that are commonplace, and we put them with a monotone feel, and that makes them trite and dull and meaningless. And it takes all the power out of some of the Bible texts that should cause us to change our life. Just for instance, read this passage to yourself. Just take a minute and read it. Jesus said these words with the passion of a man who would die for the people he was describing. Jesus said these words with the passion of a man who would witness a long procession of men and women in heaven that he would personally have to tell them to leave because he never knew them. I think if Jesus were teaching this passage to us today, if he were here at Wellspring talking to us, the American church, he would say, you are the light of the world that so desperately needs you to shine. So get out of your little circles, get out of your little complaining huddles, get out of your little social networks and shine. Love intentionally the people I died for, who work beside you and live beside you and whose kids play baseball with your kids and who sit in algebra class next to you. I need you to shine. I need you to stop being out all over there and start being here. I certainly need you to stop being there and start being here, because right around you, and I'll bring them to you, are men and women, students, children, who I love desperately and who need the light of God to shine through you into their life to point them to something more real and lasting and visionary and permanent. And I'm calling on you to do it. You're the only option. And I just need you to love them, to listen to them, to pray for them like it matters, because it does. I need you to love them intentionally. I need you to be the light. That's what we're going to do these next weeks. Why don't you bow your head? Let me pray. God, over these next weeks, we're going to be praying often, God, for our four, for the people, men and women, students, children in our life that are not connected to you. But I don't even really want to do that today. I want this to be a moment like the start of Matthew 5, where you saw the world, the crowds, the people, the needs, the cares and concerns, the weight, and you say to your church, hey, let's just us get away for a minute and talk through this. Because I need you to be ready for them. I need you to be a light for them. I'll shine through you. I'll do all the work. I just need you to be available. I need you to take the bowl off your head so that I can shine through you. So God, I want to ask that you would speak to us. Open-ended, whatever it is you need to tell us. How do you want us to be the light? Church, take a minute to ask God that really important question. God, I thank you for Jesus who opens the door from us to you, not because of our goodness, not because we got it all right, not because we're better than anybody else, but because we've allowed you to pay for our sins. I'm grateful for Jesus, for the sacrifice he made, for the willingness he had to go to whatever lengths necessary to bring us back, to bring the world back. We devote our lives to you, grateful. We do that in the name of Jesus. Amen.